War is terrible. All you have to do is look on the television the last couple days and see what a terrible thing war is. And perhaps we should be reminded that we need to pray for those who are faced with the wars in this world, both in Ukraine and in Israel at this time. Nations are constantly at odds with one another. And when they are at odds with one another, but not actively engaged in actual war, sometimes it is said that there is a cold war going on. In such cases, the opposing nations will be working toward the destruction of one another in more subtle ways than actual physical war. Many years ago, then Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev predicted the downfall of the United States, not by war, but by a gradual eating away of our way of life. Listen to what he had to say on that occasion in 1959. "Your children's children will live under communism. You Americans are so gullible. No, you won't accept communism outright, but we will keep feeding you small doses of socialism until you finally wake up and find you are already in communism. We will not have to fight you. We will so weaken your economy until you will fall like overripe fruit into our hands." Now, I want you to know right up front that this will not be a sermon about politics. I simply use this quote to illustrate the power of the very way, the very method that Satan uses to turn us away from our goal to please God. You remember in the case of Job that Satan actually made war with him. Physically, he took away his children. He took away his health. He took away all happiness in this life. How did that work out for Satan? It didn't work out too well, because Job remained true to God. Ever since then, he has changed his tactic, and he is bringing a cold war against people. We don't see him actually attacking us physically. We don't face the same thing that Job did. But he is still fighting us, and he's fighting us in a subtle way. Satan is waging a cold war against us. He's patient. He knows that if he can get us to compromise our convictions or gradually yield to his temptations, he will eventually win us over to his side without, as they say, firing a shot. Instead of participating in this cold war with the devil, we need to bring the battle to him. We need to wage an actual war against him. One of Satan's most effective tools to win us over to him is with temptations. He appeals to our lusts. The Apostle Paul, aware of this, warns us in 2 Timothy 2 and verse 22, "Flee youthful lusts, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart." Flee youthful lusts. That's an interesting phrase. I've learned that youthful lusts aren't limited to the young. If you're looking forward to old age when lusts go away, I'm sorry to disappoint you. It won't happen. And if what you consider to be youthfulness do diminish in your life or go away, Satan will deliver new lusts, especially designed for you. Maybe pride, arrogance, maybe bitterness. These are things that Satan has at his command that he can face us with, even if we don't have the same exact lusts that we had when we are younger. As we engage in battle with the temptations that Satan puts before us, there's no better Bible story to look at than that of Joseph of the Old Testament. With that in mind, I would like to read from Genesis, the 39th chapter. I know it's kind of a lengthy reading, but what do we have to do but listen to it? We're going to read the whole 39th chapter here. It's not that long. Now, Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, brought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house and all that he had put in his hand. So it was from the time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake, and the blessings of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's hand. And he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. And Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. Now it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house. And he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" So it was, as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. And so it was, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside, that she called to the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, "See, he has brought in us a Hebrew to mock us. He came to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And it happened, when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside. So she kept his garment with her until his master came home. Then she spoke to him with words like these, saying, "The Hebrew servant whom you brought to us came in to me to mock me. So it happened, as I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled outside." So it was, when his master heard the words which his wife spoke to him, saying, "Your servant did to me after this manner," that his anger was aroused. Then Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy, And he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hands all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did, there it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's hand, because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. It's a beautiful story there. Joseph, not all of us are going to find ourselves in exactly the same predicament that Joseph faced in this pivotal moment of his life. But no doubt there will still be moments when we must fight similar battles. God is calling us to be holy. If we look in 1 Peter, the first chapter, verses 13 to 16, we see, "Therefore, gird up the loins of your minds, be sober, and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, not conforming yourselves to the former lusts as in your ignorance, but as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, because it is written, 'Be holy, for I am holy.'" Like Joseph, we will each be called into our own battlefield to wage war for our purity. If we are to win this war, there are some realities that we must face. We must learn about these realities to recognize and address it in our lives. Several of these realities are illustrated in this story from Joseph's life. The first one we want to look at is that Satan will prey on our weaknesses. Satan is going to try to take advantage of our weaknesses. We all have weaknesses, and he knows what they are. It is interesting that the Holy Spirit would compare Satan to a lion. In 1 Peter? I've got 2 Peter on there. I've got 1 Peter in my notes. I don't know which one it is at this time. He says, "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks around like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour." Now, that doesn't sound very subtle, does it? Walking about like a roaring lion. But we know that lions also stalk their prey, and they don't roar when they're stalking. And I suggest to you that this roaring lion will come upon us unbeknownst, and he will stalk us at our weakest moment. He watches for moments of weakness in each of us and attacks when it is in his best interest. In the case of Joseph, Joseph was vulnerable. I really believe he was. He was young. He was far away from home. He was in a strange place, not knowing if he would ever see his family again, the people that he could depend upon to support him. He probably had feelings of fear and loneliness at times, and possibly feelings of being anonymous. You know, he probably had situations in which he thought the doors were open to sin and he could get away with sin. But it seems that he fought those. He was a man. He had all the urges that a man has. Please don't do Joseph an injustice or a disservice by thinking him as a spiritual superhero who would be unaffected by this woman's advances. He was a man. The truth is that he was a man with the same passions and desires of any young man. And Satan was aware of this vulnerability and wasn't going to give him any slack. Satan saw that this was a time to attack, and attack he did. Well, Satan doesn't cut us any slack either. And he'll hit us where we are vulnerable, where we are weak. He is looking for our weaknesses. I'm reminded of the passage in Ephesians 4, I believe it's verse 27, where the Apostle Paul says, don't give any place for the devil. I believe that implies that the devil will take advantage of us. Take advantage of us if we give place to him. For instance, if a person is struggling in his marriage, he knows that Satan knows that this is a perfect time to insert some other man or woman into that person's life, who will provide what he thinks he's missing. Satan knows that in our youth, it's important to be accepted by our peers. And that it's hard to do right when everyone around us is doing wrong. And he knew that in Joseph's case also. It's in these kinds of situations that he will put the pressure on us to be unfaithful or to take a drink or take drugs or other sinful activities. Joseph, no matter how bad the circumstances were, and they were really bad at times, he never used them as an excuse for sin, and nor should we. It doesn't matter how unfairly I may feel that I've been mistreated or by someone, perhaps in the congregation, that doesn't justify gossip. It doesn't matter how bad things might be in one's marriage. It doesn't justify cheating. It doesn't matter how much pressure one is getting to have just a drink or engage in sexual sin or to use profanity. It doesn't justify caving in. Why? Because Satan will prey on our weaknesses. The second thing we need to realize is that Satan will use our blessings to tempt us. There were two things that caused Potiphar's wife to take special note of Joseph. He was handsome. A handsome appearance and beauty are blessings. But bear in mind that Satan will use them to entrap. The second thing is, he was available. Because of his advancement in the house of Potiphar, he was around the house. He was available to this evil woman. Even at times when the master wasn't there, Satan will use this to try to lure him into sin. Satan will use our blessings to try to curse us. Perhaps like Joseph, one has an attractive appearance. Satan will use that. Perhaps our material possessions, our blessings from God, our riches, will attract somebody to try to bring us down. In 1 Timothy, the 6th chapter and verse 10, says, For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the truth, and in their greediness, strayed from the truth in their greediness, and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. It's a blessing. It is a true blessing to live in a time and place where our needs and desires are richly supplied. We really need to be thankful to God for that. But Satan is there watching also, and he will try to have us so consumed with having more that little is left to devote to God. There are also technological advances that we have today that were not available not many years past. And what a blessing it is to have these advantages, these advances for good, for use for good. Yet, can we not see that Satan has used these great tools to try to corrupt us? Things such as computer pornography, and not just that, many other temptations that are thrown at us, constantly being appealed to our materialism, and everything that Satan can use to try to bring us down. There's also athletic abilities that many people have, or special talents, and intelligence. Some people are really smart, and these are blessings. But if you're not careful, Satan will convince you to stress these things over spiritual things. He'll try to convince the young person, for instance, that a ball game, a recital, or studying for a test is more important than fulfilling spiritual responsibilities. And that's not just limited to young people. We have our distractions when we're older also. Yes, Satan will use our blessings to tempt us. We need to be aware of that. Be aware of these things that Satan is trying to use in this cold war against us. Another thing we need to realize is that we need to maintain purity. We must say no. We must say no. Titus, the second chapter, verses 11 and 12. For the grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present age. Take note of the way that Joseph responded to the advances of Potiphar's wife. He said no. He refused her. He ran from her. And there isn't any shame in running from temptation. He literally ran. He refused her over and over. There are no magical formulas for defeating temptation in our lives. It's simple. Just say no. When Satan tempts, we must simply refuse. There's two things that I want us to note about Joseph's refusal. The manner of his refusal was immediate and firm. You know, sometimes we get in trouble because we take too much time to think about something. Too often, given enough time, we give in to it and we try to justify it. Anything less than an immediate refusal of temptation turns us in the wrong direction and makes us even more vulnerable to Satan. Notice the reasons for his refusal in verses 8 and 9. He thought of his master's interests. He told this woman, "How can I do this? He has kept back nothing from me except you." He wasn't thinking of himself. He was thinking of his master. And his own standards. He made that statement, "How can I do this?" But most of all, he cited God's will. He said, how can I do this and sin against God? He was concerned that he would sin against God. The Just Say No motto that was popularized in the 1980s in a war against drugs, and is now ridiculed today, by the way, is what we need in our battle with temptations. We need to just say no. There's one more thing that we need to realize in battling this cold war, and that is that we may suffer for doing the right thing. When we resist temptations and stand up for what is right, sometimes our reward is suffering. In fact, Paul warned that that's going to happen. In 2 Timothy 3 and verse 12, he said that all who are godly in this world are going to face temptations. We're going to face them. We're not going to be exempt from that. This is what happened to Joseph. He suffered because he did right. He suffered greatly. He got thrown into prison. It may happen to us as well. Now, I don't suspect we'll get thrown into prison, although you never know nowadays. But we may lose friends. We possibly could even lose a job. And if nothing else, be ridiculed. Ridiculed for doing what is right. And sometimes that's really hard to take. But keep in mind that doing the right thing always pays off in the end. 1 Peter 4 and verse 16, yet if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in this matter. Now before he said that, he said we should not suffer in doing evil. For doing evil. But if anyone suffers as a Christian because he's doing what is right, let him not be ashamed. Don't be ashamed of that. But glorify God that you were able to suffer for the cause of Christ. And it all worked out well for Joseph in the end. It took a while. He suffered for quite a while. But as time went on, he was blessed by God for doing right. We already saw in the last part of that chapter that we read that God was with him and elevated him even while he was in prison. And eventually we know the rest of the story, how that he became ruler of Egypt, ruler to everyone other than Pharaoh himself, second in command, blessed beyond measure for doing what was right. We may not be able to see the rewards in doing right and resisting wrong at the very moment of temptation, but keep looking, and in time we will be glad if we did the right thing. Yes, there's a war out there. Right now, it's probably a cold war in our lives, but we need to take the war to Satan and defeat him. We can do it, not on our own, but by the grace of God with his help. Even if we don't see the abundant rewards of doing God's will in this life, there will come a time when we will stand before the righteous judge to give account for our lives. We need to be prepared before God like Joseph. Are you prepared to meet your Lord? In a moment, we're going to be singing the song that's been announced for our invitation song. If there's anyone in this assembly who needs to respond to the invitation of the Lord to be baptized into Christ for the remission of your sins, or if you've done that in the past and you have a spiritual need that we can pray about, we invite you to come while together we stand and while we sing.